You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truthful Out Radio. Today's date is Friday the 20th of September 2019 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting live today at RadioAryan.com because we have with us the producer of Adolf Hitler, the greatest story never told, Communism by the Back Door and the Freemasonic Victors of World War II, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, how are you doing this evening?
Well, I've had better weeks, but, you know, can't complain. I'm always going to be here.
It's three quarters of the way through the year almost. Did you know that? It's the equinox.
I put it down to the end of summer, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Autumnal feel in the air. People are starting to get ready for Christmas. It's really flown past. Is there going to be any DVDs out or anything? Are you going to try and cash in on the Christmas present thing with any of your documentaries this year, do you think?
I don't think so, no. Not how things have been restricted with PayPal. I don't think many people are clued up on Bitcoin, and that's the only way, really, that people can get to it. I'm hoping any day now to send out the stick that promised John. I got held up a little bit because I was hoping to put a part in at the end resources and things like that, but it looks like it's I can probably send him that on a little bit later when that's finished.
Yeah, that's a real shame, isn't it? You know, really, we need somebody to come up with some kind of financial alternative to PayPal. We need something Chinese or something Russian. I was reading the other day about Huawei, and now that they've been stopped from using Google, they've still got their Huawei phones in Europe, and they're working on a platform that uses the Chinese version of it all, even though it will be in European languages and able to be used over here, but using the Chinese version. And, you know, there may be a possibility that there may be Chinese credit card processors that are nothing to do with PayPal or American Express or Visa. And, you know, they're not going to be bothered by people writing them to them saying, people are saying, we don't like these people because they like Adolf Hitler, or they're saying mean things about Negroes, you know?
It's the first time I've ever heard capitalists moan about where they're getting the money from.
Yeah, that's a good point. It is the only time, isn't it? You know, they're quite happy to take prostitutes' money, gambling money, but, you know, if you're exposing the truth about World War II and about history, then, you know, they're just going to drop you. It's a shame. It's a shame. But at least your stuff's still available online, isn't it? You've got your BitChute channel. You've got your website.
So. Yeah, I tried uploading to BitChute this week another episode of The Greatest Story, but couldn't even get the page. I mean, I had the page on a BitChute to click the link to upload, but when I clicked the link to upload, it said this site not available.
You've got technical issues as well. I know BitChute isn't the most up-to-date website. It's all we've got, unfortunately. I guess maybe the more people sort of advertise it, the more people use it, the more donations they'll get, and hopefully they'll put some investment into it. And Gab's looking
for it. I saw Wikipedia asking for donations, would you believe?
Yeah, everybody's after it. I guess, maybe with Christmas coming up, they're sort of trying to get all their donation drives in now. But BitChute is something that does, you know, I'd say that's quite a good cause to donate to because, you know, they could make improvements. If they had the money, they could make improvements. So they seem the sort of people that would use the money for improvements as well because they're trying to take on the, you know, the larger companies. But anyway,
When they bought YouTube, Google, I think it was they paid two guys who used to work for PayPal, believe it or not. I think it was 67 billion to buy the site, which I find incredible at the time because although these guys were loading videos up onto this site, I would have thought Google could have come up with an offer much less what would have satisfied them.
Well, it's all very incestuous as well, isn't it? PayPal, Google, YouTube, they've all either got girlfriends that own the other company or wives that are part of the other company, and I think they're all to do with that alphabet mother company over the top of them. It's really a big monopoly. Yeah. It's like gangsters.
Oh, definitely. In fact, with the Krays, for instance, they found out the hard way that there's only one gang in the UK, and it weren't the Krays.
It's the same lot that are running Google and YouTube, yeah?
Exactly.
Right. Well, let's get into our subject matter for today then. So people can still find your stuff at your own websites, can't they, actually? Just before we get into this, can you just say the names of them so people can find them?
TheGreatStoryNeverTold.tv coming as by the back door. It can be abbreviated .tv, and obviously puts on it Victory, although I don't think all the episodes are up yet. But that's because they've had a bit of hassle where they are, in the country they are, so they've just had to lie low as well, really.
But you got two out of the three that people can still access. That's good news.
Well, if they're on BitChute, yeah, they can access Masonic Victory as well. So I'm pretty sure if you go on archive.org, you will be able to find a greater story. I think YouTube still carries communism by the back door.
Good point there. Yeah, archive.org as well. Well, we've got a book that we're going to get into today. It'll probably take us two episodes, I'm guessing. It's a short book, and it was written by Joseph Goebbels in 1926, before he had actually moved to Berlin. And it's basically an explanation of what National Socialism is about. And it's an older National Socialist that is talking to a young German and explaining the ideals of National Socialism, what it means. And these were the early ideals before they'd actually taken power. So they were quite idealistic, but I think they'd make some really good talking points. That's why I thought it would make a good subject for tonight. I've obviously got a few quotes from there. Did you get a chance to have a look through it, Dennis?
I had a bit of a look through it, yeah. In fact, I've been compared to Goebbels many, many times. When the greatest story being criticised on the internet, they forever bring up compare me to Goebbels, which I suppose is a compliment.
That's a great compliment. That's a great compliment, especially from them. Well, it begins with 10 commandments for National Socialists, which I thought were particularly good. And it starts off with a quote. It says, "Your country is the mainspring of your life. Remember this always." And, you know, I can remember being taught similar things to that when I was in the Cub Scouts, but I don't think they really like that anymore. You know, they taught you to have a love of your country and patriotism and understand how important the country is. And the number one, it says, "Germany is your fatherland. Love it above all and more in deeds than in words." And obviously, you know, you can transfer that to whatever country is yours, you know, for the listeners there. But the important bit there, I think, is more in deeds than in words.
Yeah, actions speak louder than words. Yeah,
definitely. Definitely.
Things move with deeds, don't they?
Yeah, and I think that this shows the Christian influence as well. You know, it's not about words, it's about deeds. It's about deeds. Number two, Germany's enemies are your enemies. Hate them with all your heart. And again, I would say that.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you were German, you knew who your enemies were, especially after 1933. I think.
Well, you can say it today as well. You can say, you know, who are the enemies of your people? You should hate them with all your heart. And again, I would say that was Christian. I mean, it says in the Bible that you should hate the enemies of God with all your heart. You should hate the enemies of your people with all your heart. It says that in the Book of Psalms. This loving your enemies bit, that is only personal enemies that you have among your own people. It's not, you know, the enemies of your nation. You are supposed to hate them with all your heart because they're obviously the enemies of God if they're the enemies of your nation.
To destroy the nation of God, yeah.
Yeah, and you have to defend it. Number three, every national comrade, even the lowliest, is part of Germany. Love him as you love yourself. And I think that's really important because, you know, we get a lot of the time you come across people and they will talk dismissively of normies. You know, you get some people saying, well, you know, we should just have a big cull and get rid of all the idiots. And you think, well, that wasn't the way the National Socialists were. And Adolf Hitler didn't say, well, we've got to get rid of all, you know, the lower IQ'd people. We don't want the Germans that are liberals. We're going to hang them all or whatever. And he said, no, they said, if they're a part of Germany, you have to love him as you love yourself, even the lowliest, and do what you can to raise them up.
What that reminds me of is when people walk past, say, the homeless, they'll just scurry past as if they don't exist. I remember somebody saying, not long back, saying, like, it'd be good for some people to actually just hold the conversation with somebody in a cardboard box, because, you know, they probably don't speak to anybody in all the day. So I think this is a similar type of thing. They are still part of the country. They need help.
And they're your racial kinsmen. This is the thing. The nation is an extension of the family. So you are related to them. I was listening to a podcast, a scientific sort of podcast a while back, and they were talking about how close we actually are to one another when compared to other nations in the world. And it was something like English people. No, I think it was even siblings, or as close as siblings when compared to, say, Somalians. You know, you're that close.
Yeah, I can believe that one, yeah.
When you compare them to people that are a lot further away from you, and we've been taught to sort of look down our noses at certain classes, and as you say, people that are homeless, and it can make a big difference to someone just, you know, carrying out an act of charity, say, for somebody who's homeless, buying them a cup of tea, mm-hmm. just stopping and talking to them, like you said there,
they're swept under the carpet, aren't they?
Yeah.
I mean, very few people know just how many homeless there is, because I watched a documentary a bit back in the, I think it was in the Midlands somewhere, you know, in the counties where all the, you know, the green grass is. And there's a number of homeless there, but on the record it reads no homeless. And this guy were actually talking to a homeless person. So figures aren't true.
Well, I would say, in conversely, from this as well, I mean, most of the time, the homeless that you see aren't homeless, they're foreigners claiming to be homeless. You know, how can mm-hmm. you go to someone else's country, you know, make it all the way to someone else's country and then claim to be homeless? You know, your home is in another country. So conversely, I'd say...
Especially when it says on the paperwork, if you want to claim asylum, you must have a house and we can provide it.
Yeah, well, you're supposed to claim asylum in the first country you come to, but, you know, I would say you see people that shouldn't be here, you know, and even if they are in need, the best thing to do is to just ignore it, ignore them, but go out of your way to help your own people.
The paperwork I saw, they were more or less told to get a house and then they can apply, and they do everything they could to help them get a house.
What was this about? Asylum seekers are going to get this?
Yeah. I mean, it was official paperwork I came across. Somebody sent it in, as usually happens. And it just shows certain directions for people who wanted to claim asylum in this country. And if you don't claim for housing, then you can't claim for asylum. And obviously, you bend over backwards to find the housing.
Yeah, and I've seen adverts like that as well, saying come to Britain, you'll get free healthcare, you'll get free education, you'll get welfare and benefits. We can set it up for you. And you look at, you think, well, who's this? And you look at it, and it says the British Home Office. They're the ones actually sending out these adverts. I think that one that I saw was an Arabian one in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
So
surprised me at all.
You know, it might sound mean, don't help the foreigners, but if you are diverting your attentions to them, then that means they're not being diverted to your own people. We've got to look after people first.
I've never been a big fan of Manchester United, but last year, I think it was last year anyway, one of the players, two of the players who had buildings in Manchester, they're building a hotel, they had some homeless creep in and try and stay overnight. And instead of kicking them out, these two footballers, I think it were Neville and Ryan Giggs, they said they could stay, and they could stay over Christmas. And they even hired security guards to guard over them.
I remember hearing about that. Yeah, I think I remember seeing that on the news, Dennis. I'm thinking that was really good of them. And I think the majority of them were white as well. surprised.
Yeah, there were people from England who got homeless.
Yeah, the foreigners will have all been put in hostels, because they'll put them in hostels first as well, because they'll say, oh, well, they're foreign. They don't really speak much English. We have to look after them first.
Yeah, they just come from a war, yeah.
Yeah, a war in France. Yeah, a war in Germany. Right.
Yeah, a yellow jacket.
Yeah. Number four, demand only duties for yourself. Then Germany will also regain rights and privileges. Again, I think that's really good. What that's saying is, you know, volunteer to do things. Don't you know, order other people around, try and get other people to do things. Think of what it is that you are capable of doing and offer to do it yourself. Demand duties for yourself, not, you know, duties for other people, or other people should be doing this, other people should be doing that. But go out and do things for yourself. No, this is,
unfortunately, in this country, I don't think we have any rights as such. I think we're all landed with privileges, which, of course, can be taken away. We don't need a law to say that we can be deprived of them.
Yeah, that was a big part of what the National Socialists were saying, and that will become clearer as we go along with this, that they were saying that what you think you have as rights, they are not rights. And we are saying that we will give you rights, but you'll have to join us in fighting for them and taking them back. And a large part of a large part of gaining those rights was removing the shackles of the bankers and the banking system and the capitalist system.
Of course. Yeah, of course.
Because, you know, they were saying you have the right to a share in your country. You have a right to share in the prosperity of your country. And you don't have that under capitalism. You're told it's everybody's country. You know, I think that's the main one.
That's the main theme of late.
Well, it fits in with this part five as well. Commandment number five: be proud of Germany. You have a right to take pride in a fatherland for which millions gave their lives. Again, we're not told that today, that we should be proud of our country, we should be proud of Britain, and we have a right to take pride in Britain and all the achievements that went on in the past, because those people gave their lives for us. That's what they laid their lives down for, was for their descendants. So, of course, we should be proud of those people that did that, and proud of the inventions and all the great things that they did. And we're not. We're told, oh, you should be feeling terrible about your ancestors. Guilty. What about slavery? What about not saving the Jews from the Holocaust? You know, I mean, we might knock Britain for its role in Germany, but that doesn't mean that the British people aren't also given all this white guilt that they tried to force upon us.
All countries are now, all the countries what fought the One World War II are carrying the same guilt. America, Australia, New Zealand, all fought in World War II, but they're getting the same treatment as what Germany's getting or got, and they're still getting.
Well, yeah, we're made out to be just as bad as the evil Nazis, and yet it was our people that fought against them, and they weren't evil, as we've discovered. Number six, he who abuses Germany abuses you and your deceased. Repay him with your fists. Which I thought was quite funny. I wouldn't suggest repaying people with your fists. But
different era.
Different era, yeah. You would do back then. I mean, that was the honourable thing to do. But, I mean, what it's saying is if somebody that is abusing your country, or isn't just abusing the place where you live, but they're abusing your ancestors, because it's your ancestors that built that country, and you're a part of that. You're a part of that nation, so they're directly abusing you. So when somebody's insulting Britain, they're directly insulting the British people by doing that, because the British people built Britain.
So I don't think people have that feeling these days. I know there was an ultimate fight a couple of weeks ago where the Irish guy McGregor kind of went to town on this Russian fighter who was fighting, and he abused his country, he abused his family, he abused his president, he abused just about everything. And so when the fight finally ended and the Russian won, he scaled this fence and was fighting all the people who backed this guy up. And so it did run deep with him. I don't think it runs that deep with us. it's been knocked out of us.
I remember that. Yeah, I remember that. And they were saying that was, you know, that was dishonourable behaviour afterwards, but it's dishonourable mm-hmm. to be goading somebody like that. You know,
there's got to be a snapping point.
Attacking someone's national pride. But we see it all the time on the television, don't we? I mean, we get my fellow whites that are attacking us all the time, and also the mm-hmm. leftist immigrants. They'll be attacking Britain and saying how racist it is. I'm just trying to think of the most recent one that was attacking us. We've had a musician, I think, who's won an award, who's got an album about really? Which is just rubbishing Great Britain. And whenever they interview these immigrants on the television, you know, they're going to be attacking Britain and talking about the British Empire and the slave trade and everything else. And they're just encouraged.
Well, I know Bono, the Irish singer, you know, U2, he's been abusing the white race for quite some time now on his stage.
Nobody stands up to him.
In fact, he probably gets more awards than anybody.
Number 7, repay like with like, and then some. If you are denied your just rights, remember you can secure them again only through your own political movement. Again, it's saying, you know, you've got to take charge here. If you want to have the rights that nature says you should have, the only way to get them is through political organising and forming a movement.
Well, I think, again, times have changed there. I mean, I could never see a far-right party actually getting off the ground in the UK. Several have tried in the past, as you know, but I think it's even worse of a time now to try something like that.
Well, maybe we could look at it this way. You need to take action. You need to get together with other people that think the same way as you and work out ways that you can change your situation. It's no good, you know, just moaning about things and complaining about things. You know, you've got to take steps to try and fix things. And the best way to take steps to fix things is with a group of other like-minded people that think the same way, because you're not going to be able to do anything as an individual. I mean, this is why you have that symbol of the fasci, where, you know, you've got thin sticks that are all put together, and together you mm-hmm. get strength from them, and from the strength you can get power enough to, you know, chop wood with them if you've got an axe head. So it's the working together. And if you're not happy about mm-hmm. something, get together and try and fix it. Number 8, do not be a hooligan. Anti-Semite, but beware of the Berliner Tagblatt. And the Berliner Tagblatt was one of Germany's foremost newspapers and entirely in Jewish hands. So basically today...
that the Sun.
Yeah, it would be beware of all the media today, which is pretty much all in Jewish hands, and it's progressive and it's politically correct and it preaches white guilt and hatred of white people, so beware of that. But it is very important. Don't be a hooligan anti-Semite. Don't be a thug. Educate yourself. Make yourself look approachable. Be a good example to people. Don't go out there starting fights or being seen drunk.
Skinheads and tattoos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this was written in 1926. Do not be a hooligan anti-Semite. And, you know, nationalism's been, you know, really tarred with a lot of hooliganism over the years that's given us a bad name. And yet, you know, we can look back right back here in 1926, and Goebbels is saying, don't do that. And this is one of the Ten Commandments of National Socialism at the time. So they had the same problems back then as we have now.
Yeah, and even if they didn't act like hooligans, they still got painted as hooligans, but the point was people who knew them knew that they weren't.
Yeah, that's it. We're always going to get attacked. They're always going to tell lies about us. But so long as you don't actually live up to those lies, then you're the honourable one, and people are going to realise that. And the more people realise it, the more people come to nationalism themselves when they realise that we're the good guys, and actually everything that's said about us is lies.
Nationalism. I just love that name. That name is central to everybody who lives in whatever country that they're born in. It is central to their whole life.
Why is it?
It should never have been demonized.
It's nature, isn't it? It's the laws of nature. I mean, you love your family. They're the closest to you. You do everything you can for your family. And the nation is just an extension of that. It's just an extended people group.
The family is what they target.
Yeah.
Communism will target the family and everything else. What makes you strong? I just love the word. I hope it never disappears.
Yeah, it comes from natal. Mm-hmm. Which is birth. So it's people that essentially share the same mother, really. People that are all descended from the same mother. So I guess when you have like a name like Britannia or Germania or Mother Russia, mm-hmm. and that's the mother of the nation, that's what it's referring to. It's essentially
that's people, the strength.
All from this one people group, and nationalism is putting the good of your nation above the good of the individual, which means that, you know, if it works correctly, it means everybody is working for everyone else. So you get a good feeling because you're helping other people, and you get a good feeling because other people are helping you. And it's not selfishness. There's no selfishness at all in nationalism. And it goes all the way as far as to lay down your life for your nation. No greater love does a man have than to lay down his life for his friend, it says in the Bible. And that's, you know, men that lay down their life for their nation. It's a noble love. It's not a sexual love. It's not a lust. Yeah, it's the highest form of love that there is nationalism. So, of course, it's demonized. And it tells us that the world we live in is a fallen world, that things like that are demonized and made out to be the wrong way to be, and that it's all about hate when it isn't.
Which it isn't, yeah.
The final one, number 10, have faith in the future. Only thus will you win it. That's a good one.
Yeah, it's being positive in it and optimistic.
Yeah, because it's saying, you know, if you are going to behave like that, then you can have faith in yourselves. And only you can change the future. Only you can be the person that fixes things. It's no good expecting other people to. And you make the changes in your individual life, and people around you, you know, they amplify those changes, and eventually you will improve your life, and you'll improve those around you. And, you know, looking back at what happened here with the National Socialists, look at everything that they managed to achieve. By putting these principles into action, they managed to take power. They managed to liberate their country. They managed to liberate half of Europe before, you know, the capitalists of the world and the money mongers of the world managed to stir everything up and gang up on them, and the Masons. And look at how the whole world actually had to gang up on them to stop them as well. You think it just started with one nation that threw off the shackles, that had the faith in themselves that they would be able to achieve it. And they also had faith in God.
They were moving things. They were shakers, weren't they? Movers and shakers.
Yeah. They had faith that what they were doing was right, and they had faith that the Christian God was behind them as well. That's important, I think. I mean, it doesn't really mention God in that, but I think you can see from that those commandments.
It mentions heaven in there somewhere.
Yeah, well, that may be later on, but these Ten Commandments, you know, they've got quite a Christian feel to them, I think.
Yeah.
But practical Christianity, not, you know, just talking words, but actually in deeds, which is why I like them. Well, after that, that's on the front page. And then after that, he goes through various topics and gives us some ideas about the National Socialist thoughts on them. And the first
clever
one,
guy, weren't he?
Yeah. Yeah, well, this is a good piece of propaganda because this was aimed at young people, basically.
Yeah.
It was like an older National Socialist coming up with all the answers to a young German that's asking him the questions and wanting to know just what National Socialism is. That's why it's good to look at it today, because it explains it to us. It's got the nature of politics. Politics may be defined as responsible activity in the service of the people with the goal of creating for these people such conditions as enable them to preserve and defend their existence in this our harsh world, to multiply and to ensure liberty and a living for themselves and their descendants. So that's the 14 words, basically, isn't it?
Mm.
Preserve and defend their existence. Preserve and defend their existence in this world, and also to ensure liberty and a living. So it's saying that they've got to provide work for people. They've got to provide...
And multiply to, you know, keep your race.
Yeah. So they've got to improve the existence, not just keep it how it is at the moment, not just preserve it, but they've got to improve the existence that people have so that the people can multiply, and through the multiplying there will be more things that are created which will improve the living standards. And they've also got to ensure liberty, which isn't the liberty to be degenerate, but is the liberty from degenerate things. So it's liberty from miscegenation and encouragement to break the natural laws. It's liberty from all these temptations, liberty from pornography, liberty from drugs and enticement to alcohol. Liberty from these things is what it's talking about, not, you know, liberty to do those things. I mean, really, you would say license to do those things, wouldn't you? I guess that's the, you know, the way that it would be explained. But it's freedom from these temptations, because you're not free if you engage in them. You're a slave to them. You're a slave to pornography. You're a slave to alcoholism. It doesn't, or you're a slave to infidelity. It doesn't satisfy the appetite. It just gives you even more of an appetite, and you just become even more of a slave to it. So they wanted to free people from interest servitude, free people from usury, and free people from temptation to be immoral, and improve the existence of the people. So eugenics comes into
that. And they're called evil.
Yeah. The BBC keep advertising that there's going to be a series on eugenics, and they're making it out to be this great, wicked, evil secret of science. Science's evil, wicked secret that came about in Britain. What is so evil and wicked about trying to improve the nation, improve the physical health of the nation, improve the mental health of the nation? I mean, you've only got what you're actually born with. So if you can improve the conditions that people are born with, you're going to improve their life. I mean, it's no good if you're creating people that are, you know, mentally unfit, because they're never going to be fit, productive people. They're always going to need looking after. So you want to prevent that.
I suppose it shows if Germany won the war and they've done this short term shock for a long-term gain, there would be less mental health people around today.
Well, you would want to give rights to the unborn child. You would want to say a child has the right to be born into a fully functioning body with a fully functioning mind, with ancestors that look like them, and with a national heritage that they can be proud in. Because today, there's nothing to protect.
Protected by the world they're born into as well, because I don't believe children are today.
It could be worded like that, because they'll say, it's wicked to prevent people with Down syndrome from having their own babies, or it's wicked to prevent people of mixed race miscegenating and producing mixed race babies. But what about the baby? What about the child? Do they not come into this?
Yeah, you could prevent them being like that. Want abortion?
Yeah. Well, you could ban that.
Is that one?
Well, again, you could say that the child has a right to be born, which would, you know, get rid of abortion. But also, the child has a right to be born with a fully functioning body, fully functioning mind. And really, you would want to say, and the child has a right to have a mother and a father. Meaning that they would stay together.
A mother and a father.
Yeah, and they wouldn't, you know, wouldn't divorce. That would be the very best foundation that children could have is a stable home. If you could make it very, very hard for them to divorce.
For same-sex parents.
Yeah, well, you could say, Well, I don't think any of our listeners are. I mean, that's depriving a child of what they would naturally have, isn't it?
Well, I'm a prime example of that because I was brought up by a single parent, and I was brought up by my father. I loved as much as I could, but there were times when I could have done with a mother. Because when I'm hiding behind a settee and he's coming to give me a walloping, you know, there's nobody to break us up to, you know, in between to say, well, just hang on a minute. That's where a mother's love comes in. And I'm sure there's other tributes which I never had of a mother. But, you know, I had a good father, to be honest, disciplined, but a good father. But I can understand how even we, the same sex parents, how a child is missing certain things, which I regard as needed.
Yeah, it's not to discredit single parents that are doing their best to bring their children up.
But no.
They can't be two people. You know, it's not physically possible. I think what you could say is if you were to have a divorce, you are depriving your child of his rights to parents. So there should be some kind of deterrent, punishment. Yeah. Fine, so something to prevent that happening because you're depriving the child of his natural rights. So I think the National Socialists looked at rights in a totally different way to the way that we look at rights today when they say, oh, human rights, that means you have the right to sodomize whoever you like. You have the right to stay in whatever country you want to. You have the right to not be sent back to Africa when you've broken into our country. All these things are ridiculous. What there should be is a child's right to life and a child's right to be born in a healthy body, and you know as we were saying, Dennis, a child's right to a family, because that's what it is, isn't it? Really,
yes.
It's a right to a family.
Exactly. And nature again, you know, the father, the mother, two different roles.
Yeah, and it's just all in tune with nature. That's the way things are supposed to be, and you can see how divorced we've become from the way things are supposed to be.
And divorce is the word, because you can go online and it's over in a second. What's that?
Yeah, people used to take vows and they understood that if they broke their vows, that was a vow to God. That was a very serious thing if you broke your vow to the Creator. Mm-hmm. And the vow was expected to last for life. And people have been taught by their parents that, look, you're not going to be happy all this time. You'll be very lucky if you're happy all this time. You have to work at the marriage. And then you might be happy when you become grandparents. But you have to work at it.
True.
And the grandparents would teach the granddaughters, you have to work at marriage in order to make it work. And now people just, if you're not happy, leave.
Press
you should be happy all the time. Yeah, you should be happy all the time. Of course, that just leaves nobody happy. And they all think everybody else is happier than they are.
Yeah, well, and once a divorce is through, I know many people who regret further down the line, a few years down the line, they regret splitting up too late. They've got another partner, they've got children with another partner. It's what can you do?
Well, you can just hope that, you know, the people that become nationalists and that learn about these things, that they try to put these things right in their own lives. That's the thing. The next section, the Workers' Party, because obviously it's the National Socialist Workers' Party, and we can talk about each one of those, but the first one is the Workers' Party. He says, aren't you well-fed citizens ashamed to fight against the class struggle of the undernourished, hollow-cheeked, unemployed, hungry working class? Yes, we call ourselves the Workers' Party. That's the first step. The first step away from the middle-class state. We call ourselves the Workers' Party because we want to make work free. Because for us, productive work is the driving force of history. Because work means more to us than possessions, education, nouveau, and a middle-class background do. That's why we call ourselves the Workers' Party. And this, you know, this is why they had that work sets you free. And they're all about the redeeming qualities of work and the contentment that you have of doing a good day's work and of knowing that you've contributed to something. So they were saying when you're working, it's all for the good of the nation. You are contributing to the nation and you're benefiting from that.
Unless today you're working 0 hours and you're working where you can't even afford to live. How did that one come about?
Well, again, it's because of usury. This was the thing where they were saying you have to get rid of usury because that takes up so much money from the budget, from the economy. So much of it is just interest that's being paid on debts. So anybody that's got a business and they're paying you, probably a third of all the money that's actually produced is just going on interest.
You're robbed, yeah.
Just going on debt. So if you get rid of that, then you can improve the wages of your workers. If your workers have got higher wages, then there's more money in circulation. If there's more money in circulation, then people can afford to buy more things. If they can afford to buy more things can be created, more jobs are created, and you get a steady improvement of life. If you introduce interest to that, which isn't created by anything, nothing creates that. You know, there isn't a harvest full of fruit and it produces all the interest that you can make. It's just sucked out from the economy. That's all it does. It's a totally negative thing. So if you get rid of that,
it goes somewhere. It goes into somebody else's pocket.
Yeah, siphoned out into the bankers' pockets. So if you cut that out, then you know I would guess that you probably got about a third more money. Everybody's got a third more money, and even if you've got people
which
that aren't,
would be a start, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well,
even a lower age.
Even if you've got people that aren't very, you know, aren't very clever with that fact, you've still got a third more money in the economy, because even when they spend it, it doesn't disappear. It goes into the economy and it goes into the circulation, and it means that the nation can afford to buy more things. So work was looked at in a different way. Not, you have to do this to earn enough money to get by, but don't you want to be doing something fulfilling? Don't you want to be doing what you can to help your nation, to help your people? And you could do that then because they're being taught the nation is the extension of the family, and obviously you want to help your family. So if you're teaching children that the nation is their family, they're going to be far more inclined to be wanting to work and helping these people because they're helping their brothers and sisters out. When if you've got a load of foreigners there, people don't want to be helping them. You know, you don't want to be giving of yourself to help out a load of foreigners that, you know, have done nothing to help build the country.
Yeah,
they don't care, that just want to take what you're producing and send it back to their own family. Quite naturally. I mean, it's only natural.
So they can come over.
Yeah. So more of them can come over and siphon more out. You know, people aren't going to want to work, are they? And we got that today. We've got people that don't want to work. They don't understand about the factor of work that is contributing to the people around you, contributing to the nation. And all this is tied in together. Go on.
Well, it's true because I've watched a program again in South Wales. One of the towns in South Wales voted for Brexit, and yet the EU had spent something like £1 billion on the town, you know, with nice statues and they had a nice sports hall and other things, you know, which didn't actually produce anything. Where all the town needed, because the town's dying, were jobs. You know, and they wanted to go back to the old times where they had the steelworks and the coal. And that's why people couldn't understand why this town voted for Brexit when they were getting all this money off the EU, but it was useless to them.
You get a real good sense of satisfaction when you've done a good job of something. When you've done a good day's work and you've done well at what you've done and you've got something that's been created at the end of it, you have a sense of satisfaction, a sense of contributing, and you feel a part of the community. It's very, very important, this idea of avoiding work. I think that comes from comics and cartoons and things like that, where it's seen as a positive thing to avoid having to do any work. Do you know what I mean there, Dennis?
I do, yeah, I do.
You know, it's all seen as very, very funny, and that's what you should be doing, is trying to avoid work. Well, there wouldn't have been anything like that in National Socialist Germany, encouraging people to
shirk. Well, they wouldn't have sold off all other assets. I mean, that's what we've done. That's what America's done. Sold all the assets. So there's no jobs.
And we should, that's like selling off the family silverware, isn't it?
Completely. Once it's gone, it's gone.
Selling off all the national assets. So you think about it. Who built Who built the electric grid? Who built the waterways, the reservoirs? You know, our ancestors built all of that. So why don't our ancestors own it anymore? Why has it been taken and given to Japanese power companies, Chinese companies, French companies?
It's the same with North Sea oil. That's the last of us from the millennium.
It's our inheritance.
It's gone. Yeah.
That's been given away. And the only way it could be given away is through this idea of multiculturalism and one world order and we're all the same. And it doesn't matter. It's still owned by the world. I mean, we see an extension of that with this climate change nonsense. That's encouraging everyone to think that all the world's problems are our own. And instead of getting them to sort their problems out in Asia and Africa, we have to do it all here. Even though I think it's something like 90% of all the waste comes from the rivers in Asia and Africa, and yet we're the ones trying to fix it.
A lot of it is called by NASA anyway. You know, to convince people that there's a problem. There were scientists talking the other day where, for the first time ever, he was asked, why do all the other scientists disagree with you? Because he wasn't for global warming. And he said, it's a gravy train. They're on a gravy train. And he's right. It's just a con.
And you've also got this point here that they're saying, you know, why are these people looking down on the workers? Why have they got no concern for the unemployed and the people that don't have jobs? It's because they've been taught to see them as different. They haven't been taught to see themselves as an ethnic nation. It's all tied in together. There's no way of just, you know, fixing one of these issues. All of them need to be fixed. And the only way you can fix all of them is through nationalism, which goes back to what I was saying. You have to form a political movement in order to get this done.
Another problem, before the National Socialists came to power, was the number of suicides, which we are seeing today in Britain. And no doubt figures again have been altered. But there's a number of suicides in Britain these days where people just have no hope.
We have a massive problem with male suicide as well. It's never women who commit suicide. It's always men.
That's
why it doesn't really get dealt with. Well, the next one here, socialism and socialist. Yes, we call ourselves socialist. That's the second step. The second step away from the middle class state. We call ourselves socialist in protest against the lie of social middle class pity. We don't want pity and we don't want social mindedness. We don't care a hoot for that which you call social welfare legislation. That is barely enough to keep body and soul together. We want the rights to which nature and the law entitle us. We want our full share of what heaven gave us and the returns from our physical and mental labours, and that is socialism. So saying, instead of giving out all these benefits to people, which are barely enough to get by, we want jobs for everyone. We want everyone to be able to earn their own way, and we want there to be a decent wage. And that's why it's saying a full share of what heaven gave us. What does heaven give us? Well, it gives us water, trees. I mean, really, whatever our ancestors built, these systems, as I was saying, this infrastructure, that should be free. Railways, that should be free. The transport on the railways. Electricity, that should be free. Water should be free. Heating. Yeah. All of these things that were set up by our ancestors, that should come as part of the general wealth that we create together.
Right.
And obviously you've got to pay the wages of the people that work on that, but that should come from the wealth that we generate amongst ourselves. The only reason you can't do that, again, is because you've got foreigners in among us. Because nobody would want to say, well, we want to give all that away for free to somebody like that. But if it was your own family, I mean, you don't, when you've got your family living in the house together, you don't, you know, charge each separate one of you and turn the heating off in their bedroom or whatever. It's for the whole house. It's for all the people to use. Share it.
This is the mistake that the Americans made, the American historians who claimed that Germany was no different to Russia because they're both socialists. And there's a huge difference.
Well, it's a totally different way of looking at socialism, isn't it? It's not
the right way.
It's not social justice warriors. that sort of Marxism. Socialism. No. It's not looking at everybody as an economic unit. It's looking at everybody as a part of the nation and as a part of the race. And that's the value that they have, is that they are a part of your family. And you wouldn't look at, say, your brother or your sister or your mother or your father as an economic unit. You know, they're priceless. That's your family. That's your own flesh and blood. And that's what the National Socialists were saying about the nation. They're priceless. And if you look at the potential of what they could create, then, the sky's the limit. If you take interest out of it and you look at what the National Socialists did, by the end of it, they were 10 years ahead of everyone else. They had all these patents for all these inventions that they had created at the end of the war, because work had been freed up from interest, and they had all been imbued with a nationalist spirit of contributing to the nation. That
the problem with Marxism is that they do put an African and an Asian above your brother and above your sister and above your family. That's what it teaches.
And we get to Marxism in a minute, just before the end, because the next one is nationalist and socialist. Then we will prove that nationalism is more than a comfortable moral theology of middle-class wealth and capitalist profit. The cesspool of corruption and depravity will then yield to a new nationalism as a radical form of national self-defense, and to a new socialism as the most conscious creation of its requisite preconditions. So socialism should come from nationalism. If you do everything for the benefit of the nation and the nation becomes central, then socialism will come from that. Jobs will come from that for everyone. A better standard of living will come from that for everyone. The best social conditions possible come from following nationalist ideals. So that's how the two fit together. So I say it's a radical form of national self-defense, defending the nation, causing the nation to prosper, increasing the people in the nation, and all of that leads to better social conditions for everyone within that nation.
Correct.
A huge difference between that and communism, international socialism, and that's the next one here is Marxism. You speak of socialism, but after a 60-year struggle for socialism, which has resulted in the complete undoing of the ideal of the state, is the German worker not justified in despairing of socialism and the future of his social class? Never. Consider. Number one, he has not fought for 60 years for socialism, but for Marxism. And Marxism, with its destructive theories of peoples and races, is the exact opposite of socialism. Number two, Marxism was never the German worker's ideal of the state. He accepted this jumble of Jewish ideas only because there were no other choices open to him in his struggle for the freedom of his class. That's the same today, isn't it? You've got no other choices to us. And the other choices that we get, the nationalist choices, they get slandered and made out to be the bad guys. You've got cultural Marxism everywhere. The third one, Marxism is the graveyard, not only for national peoples, but also particularly for the one class that fights wholeheartedly for its realization, the working class. It is therefore not the worker's right to give up on socialism, but rather his duty to give up on Marxism. And the sooner he does so, the better for him. The clock is about to strike midnight. And that's interesting as well, because that's all come true, hasn't it? I mean, if you think of the...
All
the people that fought for the Labour Party, for instance, that made out that it was the party of the working class, and all it cares about now is bringing in more foreigners. It does everything for the foreigners who have displaced the working class, and the working class are now mostly on benefits. Even the ones that are working, they have to take benefits as well.
Like the Fabian Society says, which Corbyn is one of, wolf in sheep's clothing.
It's all come true, these ideas that he was laying out here. So that's National Socialism. Then he's asked about a monarchy or a republic. And he says neither one nor the other. Because, number one, the question of the organizational structure of a state is a very minor one today, a people wasting away under the terms of the Treaty of Versailles has other things to worry about than the question of monarchy versus republic. And I'll just stop there. And I mean, that's the same as saying, well, you know, we've got more important things to worry about than pagan versus Christian in nationalism.
Agreed.
You know, there are far more important things that we need to be dealing with. Don't get distracted by petty issues. And at the time back there, obviously they're living under the problems that were created by the Treaty of Versailles. It was more important to change that than it was to argue over whether we should have a republic or a monarchy. And then number two, the people will be able to settle this question once and for all only when they have their liberty. So once you got freedom, then you can sort it out. And he says, but in principle, we say a good republic is better than a bad monarchy, and a good monarchy is better than a bad republic. Both forms of government have their merits and their disadvantages. Weighing them against each other is the concern of a people facing the rest of the world in liberty. So if you've got the freedom to be worrying about that, and that's all you've got to worry about, then you're in a pretty good place, seems to be what he is saying.
And it's a good thing that in a good republic, better than a bad monarchy, and a good monarchy, better than a bad republic. Yeah, it's a fair saying, is that?
So long as it's good and so long as it works, you know, there really isn't that much of a problem with it. And also, don't get distracted by these things. I mean, a lot of what the political parties do is similar to that. They give you these distractions and pretend that pretend that things that really aren't that important are massively important and actually constitute huge differences between the Conservative Party and the Labour Party, but they really don't. I mean, they're all on the same page with diversity.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what it's like now. I mean, this Brexit has gone on for so long now, but they're using that as well, you know, because other things are going on, they're getting unnoticed. It's going through, you know, like I said, almost as in other things. It's all Brexit, Brexit, Brexit on the telly.
And they, you know, they all agree, really, that they don't want it. It's only a very small minority that actually do want Brexit, and the rest of them are petty differences, calling it hard Brexit or no deal Brexit, when actually it's just Brexit. All of those are just distractions.
That election was clear. It said either in or out. Nothing to do with hard Brexits or soft Brexits.
Nothing to do with the deal. We weren't asked if we wanted to go back and make another deal. We voted against Cameron's deal. That was the whole point of it.
2 out of 3, yeah.
Yeah, that was the whole point of the referendum, wasn't it? Do you want David Cameron's deal or do you want to leave? And everybody said, we want to leave. So then they say, well, that means that you want Theresa May's deal, does it? No. It means we want to leave. Well, the final bit I've got here, if we get time, our platform. Every party has a platform. What is yours? If you want to win the German worker over to your side, what do you offer him? If we were big shots like the Jews, we would now spell out a long list of promises. Nothing is easier than that. Telling the truth is what is difficult. It is even more difficult to listen to and understand it. We tell it nevertheless, knowing that it alone shows the way to salvation. And that's what we get from all these parties, isn't it? They reel out promises, a long list promises. Of promises.
And all my political life.
and then they break them. And then he says, number one, certainly every party has its platform, but no party has ever put its platform into effect. None could, nor will they be able to in the future, because all platforms set out to date have been unworkable, because they're not based on nationalism. And because you've got a democracy, you've got people sort of arguing. You're not able to actually get your idea across. And if you do get it across, the next party that gets in is just going to change it.
Yeah, wonderful.
I mean, if you look at it now, they're trying to stop Boris Johnson. Let's make a law and we'll stop Boris Johnson going to the EU and leaving. Well, if Boris Johnson gets elected, he can just make a law and undo that law and make a law to say that he can go to the EU and leave. It's ridiculous. So they're not able to achieve anything.
Well, this woman just took over the Social Democrats, this Tory. She's saying, if we win the next election democratically, in essence, this is what she's saying, then we shall stop the democratic Brexit. Well, you know, does it get any crazier?
Yeah, totally anti-democratic. Now, number two, our platform is concise. The liberty of the working German people. The way to achieve it is clear and simple. The liberation of the German worker and his reintegration into the national framework. We will do anything it takes to achieve this goal. We won't back away from social revolution if the liberty of the nation requires it. We do not fear to burst the chains imposed upon this nation, if that is what is needed to secure the necessities of life for the German workforce. You know, work is so central to this, is finding work for the people. Number three, we promise the German worker only this, that we will fight with him to the last breath for his rights, regardless of what this fight costs and what may come after. We offer this greatest good that anyone can conceivably offer a people and its repressed social class, the fight for freedom and for bread. Absolutely central to everything, wasn't it? It was,
well, that was 12 years of freedom that they had.
Getting everyone out to work and getting them understanding the importance of that and what the point of it was. And it wasn't just about improving your individual situation. It was about improving the situation of the whole nation and understanding your role in that, your important role and the value that you have. I mean, who feels like they're of any value at all? Does the government make you feel like you're worth anything?
Oh, yeah.
And nationalism is saying you are centre of everything. You are the centre of everything that the government does. You know, the whole point of everything that they do is to improve the conditions that you're in. And that's what the government's for. Our governments just think that they're there to improve the economy. And the economy is supposed to be there to serve us, but we serve the economy in effect with the system that we have. You can see this.
Yeah, well, we're out to ransom, aren't we? Because every now and again, when they have these crashes, we pay for it.
Totally. But you can see how revolutionary this was, these ideas that they had.
I mean, and that's the freedom and the bread. One thing in then 12 years, apart from the last part of the war, no Germans starved. Where the previous to that, you saw yourself, they were even eating dead horses in the street.
Yeah, and you've got to remember all the rest of the world was unemployed as well. They were in a Great Depression.
In recession.
Yeah, yeah. And the Germans pulled themselves out of it. Well, we'll have another look at Nazi Sozi next week, I think, Dennis. We've got to the end of the podcast now.
Okay.
Thank you very much for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next Friday with more Truthful Out Radio for you. And, of course, we do hope you have a great Equinox weekend ahead.
Tuned into Radio Aryan.